Hey, it's Larry Goins. How's everybody doing tonight? Welcome to the bi-weekly Q&A calls for Inner Circle students. What's happening?
Hey, how are you doing?
Not much.
Awesome, awesome. So I'm going to jump right in so I don't keep you guys on here any longer than you need to be. Does anybody have a question that you want to throw out there? If it's your first time, welcome to the call. We really appreciate your business. And if it's not your first time, you kind of know the drill. We just get on here, and I'll answer your questions for as long as you have them. So who has a question you'd like to throw out?
Larry, here's a tax question for you. If we sell a property on a land contract, in that kind of an escrow, does that trigger a 1099 from an escrow company?
Does it trigger a 1099 from an escrow company?
In other words, saying you sold this house because you really didn't sell it yet because it's still a land contract, right?
Well, the deed is technically still in your name. And
yeah.
You can, on a land contract, you can determine who is going to take the tax benefits on a land contract.
Okay, I understand that. But I'm talking about, you know, trying to keep the number of 1099s down that go to the IRS. If I'm just, you know, kind of moving in and out and making a few thousand dollars, just don't trying to get lesser 1099s showing up.
Yeah, and you may want to talk to your tax advisor about that to see for sure, but you know, what we do is when we sell on a land contract, we tell our buyer that they can take the tax deduction for the property. And typically, the land contract needs to be recorded for them to be able to take the tax deduction, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but we do typically record ours. In North Carolina, requires it to be recorded. So if it's recorded, then the buyer can take the tax deduction as a homeowner.
Okay.
If it's not, the seller can. But just to make sure, you know, you might want to talk to your own tax advisor.
Okay.
Cool. I hope that helped.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Who else has a question you want to jump in with?
Hey, Larry. This is Bob from Ohio.
Hey.
How you doing? Along the lines of a land contract, if I generate a contract and I do it right, where do you suggest I start if I want to sell that contract?
If you want to sell the contract. In other words, if you want to sell the paper.
Right. Where would I start?
Okay. Well, there's a lot of different places you can sell that paper. There's loanmls.com. There's even conventions out there, like Noteworthy Convention. And there's even on eBay, they buy and sell notes.
Oh.
And they buy and sell notes under the real estate other section. And also anywhere you would find a landlord.
Okay.
Also, anybody that would have a self-directed retirement account, you can look in all the major cities for property owners at the Register of Deeds with the owner's name being something like Equity Trust, Intrust, mm-hmm. CAMA Plan, IRA Services, any of the third-party custodians.
Mm-hmm.
And any of those would be typically passive investors.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
That makes sense. Do I need to worry about any kind of SEC or state SEC regulations?
In what regards? I mean, you're not like advertising for investments. All you're trying to do is sell a note.
No, I would probably either call one of these or somebody on the internet that is advertising.
Yeah, now if you go out there and advertise like, earn 10% secured by real estate, you know, then, you know, it could possibly be that the SEC would tell you that you're offering securities. But if you're trying to sell a note, that's a different story.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's kind of the difference between selling a note and trying to raise some private money.
Gotcha.
Cool.
Gotcha.
Good. Did that help?
That helps.
Great.
Thanks.
Great. Oh, you're very welcome. It's my pleasure. Who else has a question?
Larry, if I not having access to the MLS or really having any agents looking for me, would you just use Zillow or Trulia or something like that to look for properties to buy?
Well, you don't really need an agent to look on Realtor.com. Realtor.com has probably the most up-to-date information, and that's exactly what we do. When we're buying properties or looking for properties that are on the MLS, we're actually looking at Realtor.com and do our searches and have our saved searches and all right there.
Okay. And what do you, in searching on Realtor.com, what is your priority or priorities for what are you looking for? Vacants, days on the market, seller motivation, what are the things you're looking for? What are the priorities of things you're looking for to pick up a buyer when you're doing it that way?
Well, you mean pick up a property, right?
Yeah.
Well, basically, like my search criteria is what I look for is I look for something listed for, it kind of depends on the area. It might be $50,000 or less or $70,000 or less, at least 3-bedroom, at least 1.5-bath, at least 1,000 square feet. You know, that's just kind of my standard search criteria because we've found in wholesaling, it is much easier to sell a house that we can sell for less than $50,000. So that's why I set my search criteria at like $70,000 or less. That way, even if I pay $40,000 for it, I can sell it for $49,900, which is under $50,000, which makes it easier to sell if I'm wholesaling. Now, if I'm doing seller financing, I'm looking for kind of the same thing, except a house that's livable and in decent shape already.
Okay.
Yeah, does that make sense?
Sure.
Good.
How about you? Do you target houses that might be vacant other than, you know, just those 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 1,000-square-foot ideas? Do you also target other areas like vacant houses or?
Oh, that's a good question. If I see furniture in a house, typically I just overlook it.
You mean you pass it over?
That's right. And the reason is, especially if I'm wholesaling or even if I'm wholesaling or seller financing, I'm trying to do my deal and have my buyer lined up by the time I have to buy it. So the problem is, how am I going to show that house if there's somebody living in it and they got furniture in it? And, you know, and especially if it's 2 or 3 cities or states away.
Okay, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, so it's much easier to get somebody in a vacant house than a house somebody's living in.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a good question about the occupancy. That was good.
Obviously, it's better to find an area. I'm looking for an area that's out of state. I haven't located it. That's the problem, trying to figure out where to go. There's a lot of possibilities. I don't know how to look at it. And I'm all the way over in California, so it makes it easier if I get on the West Coast anyway. So,
right.
I'm thinking like, you know, within so many miles of a fairly good sized city in one of the Western states. And how many miles do you think that should be?
I think you're getting too detailed. I never look at that.
Okay.
I never look at that. I just like here in Charlotte, I'm going to select Charlotte plus 25 miles, which is the highest number of miles you can go out. So, you know, there might be a few properties in Charlotte that I would be bidding on or making offers hold. However, it's going to catch all those bedroom communities and all those other small cities and towns that are outside of Charlotte but are still in the same MSA. And then that way you can get a little better deals. There's not as many buyers looking for the properties and that sort of thing.
Okay, but you have a lot of your bandit signs out in little communities all over the place, right?
We do. Communities, small towns, bedroom communities, all that stuff.
But they could be 50, 100 miles away, really, from an MSA, right?
Oh, it could, yeah. I'm just talking about from a realtor.com standpoint.
Okay.
Yeah.
You'd do it from a sign, but not a realtor.com point of view.
I'm not sure. What are you trying to clarify the difference is?
Well, the search technique would be you got somebody calling off of a sign, and therefore you do it versus just looking at realtor.com in that same town that's 100 miles away.
Yeah, what I typically do is because realtor.com only lets you go up to 25 miles, just pick the biggest cities that are like 50 miles apart, and then that way you kind of catch everything in between.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, that's good. But if you go on Zillow, you can actually draw a circle. And Zillow's data is just a little bit behind, but it's pretty close. But with Zillow, you can draw up the. You can also go to Zillow and just type in NC, and it'll pull up every property in North Carolina, and then you narrow it down by at least 1,000 square feet, at least 3 bedrooms, no older than 1960, and that sort of thing, which is kind of my search criteria.
Okay.
Awesome. Good. I'm glad that helped. Anybody else have a question?
Hey, Larry.
Hey.
I know how to estimate repairs, you know, by square footage to approximate. What if you know that there's a problem with mold in the basement, especially like a finished basement, and you got to rip it out? How much should we build in for that?
Well, that's a good question. It depends on, is this something that somebody saw or they smelled, or is it really prevalent? And
it's prevalent, yeah.
You might want to send a professional out to get a expensive price on mold remediation.
Yeah.
To help you in your negotiating. But then you can send somebody down with a pressure tank with part Clorox and part water and get rid of it.
Yep.
Unless it's some kind of a toxic mold, which most of them are not. But, you know, you could have a test done. There are mold tests that you can buy online.
Okay. But it can get pretty expensive, huh?
Yeah, it can. But, you know, it's not that big a deal. It really isn't. I haven't run into it where it's been that big a deal.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, good. Yeah, but mold could be your friend. It helps you get a better deal on a property.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Anybody else have a question?
Larry, another question I have, just curious as to, in the general world of financing, you know, the transactional funding, the peer-to-peer lending, and that sort of stuff, is that all staying pretty easy? Is there still plenty of money, or is it getting harder to come by, or are they making the rules harder? Can you give us an update on
that? Well, as far as peer-to-peer, and transaction, you know, I don't really use those companies. But I haven't heard of any students that are having trouble. But I will tell you this. There's a lot of money sitting on the sidelines that's looking for deals. And there's a lot of people that are looking for, to a place to put money.
Okay.
To get a good return on it. So, and I know guys that are, raising money. And they're doing, 10, 20, 30, $50 million funds and raising money. And in fact, I know a guy that, well, actually a few people that went to an event recently that was full of, you know, doctors and dentists and chiropractors, and all they did at this event was they just heard pitch after pitch of what to do with their money. And, you know, several of them told me, you know, they got commitments for $500,000, for $2 million, for $5 million dollars to invest in what they're doing, you know, is for private money or whatnot. So there's stuff out there, and I would also look at my local RIA group as well. That's a really good source as well.
Okay.
Finding people that have money and want to invest it somewhere.
Okay.
Good. Anybody else have a question?
I got another one, Larry, if nobody's jumping in.
Sure.
Again, because I'm just sort of trying to figure out where to go on somewhere on the western state. Would you pick an area where there's a positive growth area or more of a negative growth area? And how far negative or far positive should it be?
Let me ask you a question. What type of deals are you wanting to do?
Filthy riches.
Okay. I don't think it really matters.
Okay.
I think you're overanalyzing it.
I know I am, but but Larry, when there's a big world out there, and you're trying to, you know, California's just kind of out of reach. So you've got to go somewhere, and if you don't have, you know, a lot of funds, you got to make the first one work. You know what I mean? So that's
absolutely. But just and that's true. You want your first deal to be a home run, but you also don't want to get caught up in paralysis of analysis.
That's right. How true.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. Another question. Do you have your Houston class all filled up?
Last I heard we had, I believe it was 14 seats left.
Okay.
So you can go to, what is it, LarryGoinsLive.com to register?
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's the link. Or you could call the office tomorrow and they would help you with that.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Awesome. You're very welcome. Who else has a question?
Hey, Larry, it looks like the stock market might be beginning to correct itself. When that happens, what have you looked to invest in regarding the real estate market?
Say that last part again.
I mean, you've been through these downturns in the past. Do you see any particular real estate avenue that is the best way to go in a down market like that?
Buy low, sell high. Well, listen.
Now, I've never heard that one before.
Oh, that's a good one. I made it up myself.
Okay, good.
So, anyway, you know, I'm not concerned about the stock market. There's a saying in the stock market, when interest rates are low, stocks will grow. When interest rates are high, stocks will die. I think a lot of what you're seeing is all the talk about the anticipation of the interest rates rising, and that has a little bit of effect on what you're seeing in the stock market right now. But I don't have any money in stocks and bonds and any of that stuff anymore. I made a decision a long, 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 long time ago that I was never going to put my money in something that I wasn't in control of. And I'm not in control of the stock markets, the board of directors, the dividends, the, you know, all that stuff. I'm not in control of it. So I don't do any of that stuff anymore. But I just believe that, you know, you want to build your war chest and be ready for whenever, you know, things hit the fan, so to speak. And I will tell you this, that when was it, Friday, when the market went down so much the first day it went down a lot, there were, 600 and some stocks that went lower, and none that went higher for the day, but 67% of the stocks, let me back up a little bit. There is a 10% drop is considered an adjustment is not the word.
Correction.
A 20% drop is considered like a bear market.
Yeah.
You know, a down market. So 67% of the stocks are in a bear market right now. They've lost 20%.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what does that tell you right there? So I would just say just be ready. Just be on the lookout and you know, have cash on hand if you can and invest in something that you know. But other than that, don't worry about it. Real estate's going to be around as long as you're buying at the right prices. You don't have to worry about it. You know, the stock market doesn't have the advantage that we have in real estate. A real estate value could be $100,000. But if we pay 60 for it, it could go down 40% and we're still at break even. So,
right.
You know, when we're buying, I mean, it never ceases to amaze me when these shows, you know, Fox and CNN and MSNBC and FNN and all these, when they have these real estate guys on here from National Association of Realtors or from Realty Track or somewhere talking about the real estate markets, they're talking about as if you were paying retail and hoping for appreciation. But we don't pay retail. We're buying below retail, so even if it drops, we're still in good shape. Because we don't have to pay par like you would in the stock market, and that's kind of what I've looked at it. I'm sorry.
That's true. Did you used to be in the stock market?
I did years ago, and you know, did some mutual funds and did a few stocks. In fact, back in the '80s, I was a penny stock broker.
Oh, really?
Yeah, back in the '80s, I was a penny stock broker selling OTC, over-the-counter stocks.
Pink sheets.
No, I wasn't. We weren't selling pink sheets, but we were selling listed OTC, NASDAQ stocks. But, you know, I worked with an investment banking firm, and they did a lot of IPOs, and, you know, we didn't get a commission per se, you know, like adding a certain percentage to the trade. We actually were market makers, investment bankers, so we had insides that we got to deal from. So the person could pay par, but we still made good money because we had our own price that was a wholesale price. But anyway, I just tend to stay out of the stock market, but it doesn't scare me. I'm not worried about that. I mean, with the market going down, that's just going to be more people looking for a safer place to put their money eventually.
Yeah, that's true. Obviously, the housing market will also, or typically anyway, drops with the market dropping.
That is true.
So the opportunity, should be out there. And it's like you said, the profit, you know, if you buy it lower, you can sell it. You can afford to sell it a little lower. So.
That's right. If you're paying 60 cents on the dollar, it can drop 40% and you're still at break even.
Right.
You don't have to wait for years to go up.
Right, exactly.
Unlike the stock market, where when you pay par for it and it drops 40%, you got to buy a bunch more just to dollar cost average, so it only has to go up half again as much to break even again.
So here's the concern, though. If you're out there buying now and this market drops, you could get caught with your pants down in terms of not being able to get profit out of that buy.
Well, I thought we just addressed that if you're paying wholesale prices.
Yeah, I understand that, but I mean, if you're looking to flip in terms of, you pay more than you would have, and then the price drops, and now you can't sell it for what you wanted to sell out of it. But if you build enough into it, then you can. I mean, at least you can break even. That's what you were saying.
Question. Yeah, but let me ask you this question: if it drops, how quick does it drop? How much and how quick?
Well,
because your average fix and flip shouldn't take you any more than 90 to 120 days.
Well, I had a case in point years ago. We bought one, got it ready within 3 weeks, and in that course of that 3 weeks, of course, we didn't have enough profit in there. I'll grant you that. We could have, and we actually were flipping this, so we fixed it up, and we were going to flip it, but we were only going to make somewhere between 12 and 15,000. We ended up losing about 10 grand on it.
Uh-huh.
Because within three to four week period, it dropped, and the worth of that house dropped 25,000.
Wow.
It was actually a condo. But we bought it based upon a recommendation of our realtor at the time, and she we just got caught. It was one of those situations where it was dropping fast.
Was it in a growth market?
It was in a market that it had stabilized, and everything. She thought everything was going along fine, and then it took a dive rather quickly. And
where was it located?
In Ohio.
Okay. So it wasn't in a market.
The market
and goes down fast.
No,
okay.
Not normally. Pretty stable, generally speaking.
Yeah. Well, you know, listen, sometimes things like that happen. And I'll be the first one to tell you, if you do enough real estate deals, you will lose money on some eventually. You will lose money.
Yeah, and we've done a few, and that was the worst we had run into. Most we've made some we broke even, but that was the worst one.
And some you will lose money on. There's no question about it.
Sure.
There's no question about that. I got a deal right now that I'm in it for $267, and I just signed the contract to sell it for $233. That's a long story, but the bottom line is it had some water damage and had to fire two contractors. It had water damage. Insurance company didn't pay for it. So I'm in it probably about $50,000 more than I need to be and kept it about a year and a half longer than I needed to.
Yeah, at that point you just cut your losses, right?
That's exactly right. So
yeah.
I still lose money on deals, as much as I hate to admit it.
No.
But that's real estate. That's real estate.
It is. It is.
That's why.
Hopefully, you're making more on the other. You're making more than you're losing. That's all.
That's
a lot more
right?
than you're losing. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Thanks, Larry.
Oh, you're very welcome. Anybody else have a question?
Hello.
Yes.
Hello, Larry. This is Nyat here. How are you doing?
Good.
Yes. Yeah, I'm in the wholesale call program with Randolph and
right.
And right now I need to find buyers, and I don't know the area I'd like to concentrate on yet. I live in San Diego, California.
Uh-huh.
And I need a specific area so that I can start fighting buyers.
Have you started having your calls with Randolph yet?
The first call, and then he gave me an assignment to find at least 20 buyers by 2 weeks from now, and I'm still struggling to find a specific area to participate in.
Okay. Have you and him talked about picking an area yet?
No. I emailed him actually a few days ago, and I haven't received any reply from him.
Okay. I know he's been out of the office for the last few days, but I think he had something going on. But, you know, there's a lot of different ways you can pick a market. I like to pick a market with an MSA at least of a million plus MSA, and also one that is a steady market, but it's not a growth market, meaning it's not a market that goes up fast and down fast. A growth market example would be like Phoenix, Arizona, Las Vegas, Nevada, and, you know, like Orange County, California, where you live in San Diego, those would be growth markets. They go up fast, but they go down fast. I would stay away from those. And also, as I mentioned, a million-plus population, I like MSAs where the median prices are less than $200,000. I like the MSAs where there's a lot of landlords. I like the MSAs where they're older, established cities. Like, for example, what's going to be a newer city, Memphis, Tennessee, or Phoenix, Arizona?
Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah, that's the newer, right?
Yes.
So I want ones that are older, more established. They've got a lot of inventory. You know, they have a lot of landlords. That way it's easier to wholesale. It's easier to seller finance. And you have good median prices. Now, a website you can go to get a lot of this data that I'm telling you about is Zillow.com/local-info. Zillow.com/local-info. And that will give you a lot of information right there. Does that help?
Okay. Yes, it does. Yes, and I will take a look at that. And I have one more question.
Sure.
If I have a house for, if I owner finance a house, right? I mean, like I buy a house and I sell it on a land contract. I think. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And under what entity should I put that property in?
What entity?
Yeah, like LLC or trust or whatever.
You could do it in an LLC. We do ours in LLCs. That's what we do.
Oh, LLC and trust different.
Well, we don't even do them in trust. We just do them in LLCs.
LLC.
Uh huh.
For each property.
No, you don't need an LLC for each property.
Okay.
You need one LLC for the properties you're buying and selling, and you need another LLC for the properties you're buying and holding or selling on land contract and keeping the land contracts.
Okay. Okay, so if I have three properties in the land contract, I can put all three in one LLC.
That is correct, yes.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, that's all.
Yeah, okay, good.
Thank you very much, Larry.
You're very welcome. Anytime.
Yeah.
Anyone else have a question?
Larry.
Uh-huh.
Hi, my name is Carolyn.
Hey, Carolyn.
Hi there. The question I have, I know with the Filthy Riches program, do you partner, or I believe on one conference call, you were saying that we as new investors could partner with you or with your team if there is a property and we come up with the money, let's say $20,000, and get help with how to, I want to say flip that property, but when we're holding the mortgage, have that sell that mortgage to someone else?
Yeah, what I think you might be talking about is we do sell some of our loans from time to time to people, and sometimes we sell partials or sell them and then sell a property with a land contract person in it and then finance part of that purchase. Like, we might have somebody in there that is buying it on a land contract for, say, $69.9, and they put $5,000 down, so we have a 64.9 note.
Yes, well, the note. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we could sell that note to you, and sell that property with the land contract buyer in it, and sell it to you for say $50,000. You put $25,000 down, and we finance $25,000, or we could probably sell you the first 5 years for say $25,000 or something. I'd have to run numbers on a financial calculator to know exactly what they are, but you know, might sell the first 5 years for $25,000 or $30,000, something like that, where your returns would be anywhere from, you know, 10% to 15%, just depending on the deal. But those are the kind of returns we sell them at.
Okay, great, okay, excellent.
So does that help
with some, if I had someone that was interested in investing, you know how, like, when we would get the money or get an investor that's interested in investing their money at an interest rate, and let's say I find a house and put a note on it, and I think we have to season it for, like, 6 months, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay. At what interest are we charging or paying back to that investor? Does that vary?
It's all negotiable.
Okay.
Everything is negotiable.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, if you negotiate where you're paying them 4%, you could pay 4%. The main thing is you want a lower interest rate and lower payments than what you're selling it on a land contract for. So you have a spread there.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, you might, for example, you might borrow at 8%.
Yeah.
And loan it out at 9 or 10, but you're probably borrowing 30, but you're, you know, selling it for, say, 70 and getting 5 or 10 down.
Okay.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Good, good. Who else has a question?
Hey, Larry, the entity question earlier sparked a question, and that was, how many properties would you recommend if they're paid off, and these are rentals, what's the number, max number you'd put in an LLC?
I don't think it's necessarily a maximum number. It's a maximum amount of assets that you feel comfortable being in one entity that may be subject to potential lawsuits.
Okay, so do you have a, what, are you saying a figure? You go by the amount?
Like an amount of equity. You know, I mean, if you have properties, you could have 100 properties, but they're all leveraged where you don't have much equity and you can put them all in one LLC. You could have a mobile home park that has a lot of high risk, and you would have it at its separate LLC. And you might own three houses that you have a lot of equity in, and you would have them in one separate LLC.
So are you saying that, do you have an amount that you'd recommend not going over?
It's whatever you feel comfortable with. It could be 50,000, it could be 100, it could be a half a million. You know, it's just whatever you feel comfortable with. Because whatever you have in there, if there's a lawsuit, it's going to open up that whole LLC to potential loss. So it's whatever you feel comfortable with. But if you're buying and selling, buy, sell, buy, sell, buy, sell, then there's no assets in there anyway.
Right. And that's what you were saying. You could just use one LLC to do that,
right?
But I was referring to rentals, because we do have some. So I was thinking, what you know, protecting those. That's what I was thinking of.
Right. That was a good question.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Anyone else have a question? Well, you guys have had a lot of good questions tonight. Okay, going once, going twice. Well, guys, thanks so much for being on here. This has been a really, really good call. And remember that if you do have any questions between now and the next call, you can always shoot me an email to larry@larrygoins.com and just put Inner Circle in the subject line, and I'll answer it as soon as I can. And with that, I really appreciate you being on, appreciate your business, and I look forward to hearing your success stories. We get them in all the time, and I look forward to hearing many, many more. So with that, thank you guys. I appreciate it, and I hope you guys all have a great night.
Thanks
a lot,
Larry.
Everybody.
You too.
Thank you.
See you later.